Welcome back to The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. When we think about the history of African Americans in San Antonio, we're too quick to put it over to the city's east side and not really think about it too deeply, but it's too narrow of a view for the city with these roots that go back 300 plus years. Everett Fly, though, is a national expert on historic black settlements. He says San Antonio has a rich African-American history that needs to be recognized and preserved. Everett Fly is an architect, landscape architecture. He's a national expert in preservation and historic black settlements. He was awarded the National Humanities Medal in 2015 by President Obama. He's also going to be presenting tomorrow night at 5:30 at the Carver Cultural Center a talk entitled Cultural Preservation, Holistic Stewardship of Black History and Place in San Antonio. It is co-sponsored by the San Antonio Office of Historic Preservation and the San Antonio Conservation Society. And Everett Fly, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David, for having me.
Our phone lines are open. We encourage you to call in if you want to talk about, have a comment about San Antonio's African-American history. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Everett, tell me about the settlements that were in San Antonio. Where are they?
Well, actually, David, the settlements are all over Bexar County in every quadrant of the city, not just East San Antonio. They're north, far north San Antonio, all the way out to Cibolo Creek. They're northwest in Bexar County out to Elotus, southwest on the Medina River, and, of course, southeast. So they're all over the county and the city.
When we call it, what do we mean by settlement? What were these places?
Well, the term that I use, David, it's not just an individual owning a piece of land. It's a group of black citizens owning land, and then they take on a civic responsibility to provide churches and schools and other facilities that that they can benefit from and use. So that collection of elements is what makes a settlement. It's not just one thing or one piece or another. It's that what I call a civic core, a school, a church, a cemetery, and there might even be things like a lodge hall or other facility.
And were they incorporated or were they just this communities out and scattered and about and people working in cooperation? It sounds very interesting.
In Bexar County, David, the settlements were not incorporated. There was quite a bit of resistance, actually, after the Civil War to African Americans owning land. So that's why I think these are unique in San Antonio or in Bexar County, because they were able to collect enough land to be able to live and work. Across the United States, and of course in Texas, we've had incorporated black towns. Most of those incorporated black towns in Texas are east of us, over towards Houston, north into northeast Texas. Around the United States, of course, there were black towns incorporated. Some were even incorporated right after the Civil War. Princeville, North Carolina, and Eatonville, Florida, both claim to be the oldest black incorporated towns in America. They were incorporated around 1887.
So do we know some of the names of these settlements?
The settlements didn't have specific geographic names, David. They were named after the residents. For example, the one that started me on the current mission that I have was the Hockley, H-O-C-K-L-E-Y, Hockley family. And then close by to that one, there was another settlement. It was the Jackson and the Winters and the Griffins. So they were referred to by family name, and these were quite extended families. Some of the individual families had 12 kids, 14 kids, et cetera, and established their prominence because they were active in church associations, school associations, and things like that.
What happened to them?
That's a good question. I'm glad you asked. Most of them, as the heirs grew up, they sold off the land. However, the talk that I'll give tomorrow will deal with cemeteries that are left from these land sales. In other words, these residents had enough civic understanding that they would separate the cemeteries from the rest of the land in their deeds and in dividing the land. So over time, David, they would sell them off to farmers or real estate investors and speculators, but the cemeteries remain, and then the heirs have moved on. There are still a number of descendants still alive here in San Antonio.
Do you think that there are stories here in San Antonio passed down from family members to family members, maybe that have stories of these settlements, they know about them in their family, and we just got to find a way to get these stories told to the greater community so that we are able to know them and enjoy them and make sure that their family history becomes part of the greater community history?
You're on point, David. Tomorrow afternoon when I give my talk, for example, there will be a large contingent of the Griffin, Jackson, and Winters family. And I had never met them until I started this immediate initiative. And once I sat down with them, they began to open their family trunks and shoeboxes and family Bibles, and the stories are just amazing. I've been posting a few of them on my website as we've moved closer to this day, but they have documents, original documents that date back to 1865. They have photographs of family members. They have photographs of events and activities. They even have some photographs of their farm animals.
Now, these cemeteries that were at the at these areas, are they still standing? Are they still there?
Many of them are still there. It makes me wonder which ones we've lost. There are a couple of them that have been disturbed, desecrated, actually, in some cases.
Like what, relocated or paved over, or what do you mean?
Well, there's one that I'll talk about tomorrow that was actually, some of the remains were relocated in 1986. And we're not sure if all of the remains were relocated. We're working hard on the research and the fact-finding on that. The Hockley Cemetery, for example, that I'll highlight tomorrow, during the development, the headstones, there were actually carved headstones in the cemetery, and they were knocked over and scooped up and put on a dump truck and hauled away, even though the folks that were doing the clearing work knew that there were graves there.
So this emphasizes that there's a sense of urgency, and we're coming to this game late. We've got to figure out how do we keep this history intact? How do we keep it alive? How do we make sure that we can get as many accurate points on tablet as possible? So do you feel a sense of urgency?
Oh, these are in the process of making my proposals and statements about this, I definitely consider these as threatened historic resources. One of the families I spoke with as recently as 3 weeks ago, one of the older family members that had recollections of the family members and the activities and the events and the history, one of those folks passed away. So all that history went with them. So we're going to be working as fast as we can to sit down with other families and collect their history and actually get them recorded to archival standards.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the phone lines are open. We definitely want to hear from anyone out there who may know these stories, family stories. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. We're going to ask the question, why haven't we taken this issue up before? Why haven't we given this history more value earlier here in San Antonio and treated it with as much honor and respect and dignity as we've done other history and conservation issues in the city? This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Charles Bellinger, Lucy Gonzalez Parsons, there's a lot of interesting, fascinating African-American history in San Antonio. Charles Bellinger was considered like the king of San Antonio in the 1930s, and he was an African-American man. He was a bootlegger and a gambler, but he was also the kingmaker. He would decide who was going to be sheriff and who was going to be mayor. Lucy Gonzalez Parsons was a former slave from San Antonio. She went on to becoming a global labor organizer. She married a Confederate soldier who was hung after the Haymarket riots in Chicago. Fascinating individuals. There's a lot of fantastic African-American history in San Antonio. In 1918, 13 African-American soldiers were hanged at Fort Sam Houston. You know, why don't we know more about this? There's a lot of incredible history, and now we're finding out about the settlements, black settlements that we had here in the area, and there's a race on to preserve as much of these places as we can, because this is an important part of San Antonio's history. As we move towards our tricentennial, we have to make sure that it is an inclusive tricentennial and that all communities are celebrated and remembered. And with me to help do that today, Everett L. Fly is an architect, and he is presenting tomorrow night at 5:30 p.m. at the Carver Community Center, a talk entitled Cultural Preservation, Holistic Stewardship of Black History and Places in San Antonio, sponsored by the San Antonio Office of Historic Preservation and the San Antonio Conservation Society. Our phone number, if you want to give us a call, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. So Everett, when we're talking about preserving these cemeteries and trying to at least establish where these settlements were, do you wonder, and we talk about all this other history comes up in San Antonio all the time, do you wonder, like, why haven't we talked about this before?
Sure, David. It's a complicated answer, but it's really difficult to do this work. I understand, you know, how some folks would say, how do we get at it and how do we start? But the interesting thing about San Antonio is that we have such amazing historical records, you know, back from the days of Spanish colonial time, you know, and coming forward. So pulling together the story or the puzzle of these enclaves, as I call them, or settlements, the Hockley and the Winters and Jackson and Griffin, it's taken a lot of hours, but the documentation is there. And if we can do that, and as we do that, it, believe it or not, it ties in and connects to all kinds of other aspects of San Antonio history, military history. You mentioned that a moment ago. For example, the Tuskegee Airmen, the mechanics for the Tuskegee Airmen were trained here at Kelly Air Force Base. And I believe there were 27 or 28 men and one woman. And that group was assigned to, after they were trained here as mechanics, assigned to Tuskegee to serve as the Tuskegee Airmen. The residents of these enclaves, the Jackson and Winters and Hockley that I discovered, were actually active in the cattle industry. They began to file their brands, cattle and livestock brands, as early as 1872. It's just by coincidence that so far the largest number of cattle brands filed by black San Antonians or black Bexar County residents happened to be this group of black landowners, which would be now just north of the airport. And so far out of the group, between 1865 and 1900, we've only found one African-American woman with a cattle brand filed with the Bexar County clerk. We're still looking, but it raises interesting questions about, you know, what were they doing and how were they working. And
sure, but in 1872, you didn't actually have to have land to have a brand.
You didn't have to, right?
You could just go out and find some maverick cattle, and you would be able to brand them and register your brand, and then set them loose out into the wild and just try and keep them together. But you would be able to. You had to have a good seed stock, but it wasn't just. You go off on your own and find someone else's cattle. It was very closely regulated, and if you weren't too careful, you would find yourself, you know, in trouble with your neighbors. Let's get a caller on the air. Deborah is on the line. Deborah, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. I was just wondering if your guest may have heard of Sweet Home, Texas. There's a group of black family members that have lived out there for years. I remember when we used to ride in trail rides, they had their own trail ride called the Sweet Home Trail Drivers. And there's a little community near New Berlin, Texas, where they reside. And my dad was born in 1923 and grew up in that area. Our ancestors from Germany settled back in that area in the 1800s. And I was just wondering if the gentleman may have heard of them.
All right, Deborah, thank you for the call. Appreciate your input. So are you familiar with the Sweet Home?
Yes, I actually have worked with the Sweet Home community as recently as 2 years ago. Many people may not know that now we're back to that collection of civic components. Sweet Home has one of the existing Rosenwald schools left in Texas. The Rosenwald School Program started in the early 1900s with Dr. Booker T. Washington at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama. And Dr. Washington was looking to provide educational opportunities for rural black residents. My collaborator, Ellen Hunt, who's also an architect, has done a lot of work on researching the Rosenwald schools. Ellen has actually talked with and communicated with descendants of Mr. Rosenwald. Mr. Julius Rosenwald was the CEO of Sears and Roebuck. And Dr. Washington invited Mr. Rosenwald to sit on the board of trustees of Tuskegee Institute. That's how the two got together. Mr. Rosenwald, of course, appreciated the initiative of Dr. Washington for education and began to invest his own money to help Dr. Washington and these communities. So the Rosenwald School at Sweet Home in Guadalupe County is one of the few left standing. The program built more than 500 schoolhouses across the rural South. The Rosenwald School at Sweet Home is one of the few that's left standing, and it's essentially intact. I mean, the roof is there, the windows are still there, they still have some of the desks. It's just
wow.
An amazing story, and it's only 25 miles from downtown San Antonio.
Does it have a historic marker?
It does have a historic marker. The school alumni group that it's actually owned by the church, which is right across the road. The group that owns it is looking for ways to continue to preserve it. The caller mentioned the trail ride. They're looking to do activities like that, that would encourage people to come out and see the building. It's really something to see.
210-614-8980 to join our conversation about the secret history of African Americans in San Antonio, that we don't want it to be a secret anymore. We want it to get everyone to know about it and celebrate it. George is on the line. And George, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I was going to bring up a very early grave of a black man. In the mission records of Mission Valero, the Alamo, in 1721, in April, there was a Spanish soldier killed by Apaches. His name was Juan Blanco, and he's listed as a Negro in the records, and he was buried. It would be the second mission site, which would be in the ballpark of Josky's, sort of, before they moved the mission to the present site. And another interesting lost history of black people in San Antonio is in the Express, San Antonio Express in 1917, there was a Confederate veteran interviewed about the Alamo. He had been there at the seizing of the Alamo by the secessionists in 1861. And in his memoirs, when they were interviewing, he mentioned that there was a slave market on one of the upstairs balcony steps at the what would be the convento of the Alamo during the Civil War, and he mentioned how much slaves were sold for, $1,000 and such, and which you never hear that part of the Alamo was used as a slave market during the Civil War.
All right, George, thank you for calling in. Yeah, 1861, that was Twiggs' surrender, which could have started the Civil War here in San Antonio at the Alamo. And there are photographs. There's a photograph that shows the Alamo in that era, and you can see definitely that there was a slave market on the Alamo grounds. So it's interesting twist that the cradle of Texas liberty is also a place where human beings were sold. And so when we talk about this history, Everett Fly, do you think that some people don't want to talk about it because it makes them feel uncomfortable? You know, we don't want to talk about the Alamo being a place where slaves were sold. You know, we just want to talk about the 13 days of glory. And so we don't really talk about the reality of things.
Well, David, there's discomfort on all sides. There are black folks that don't want to talk about it. There are brown folks that don't want to talk about it. There are white folks that don't want to talk about it. But our authentic history includes all of that. And I think it's just amazing for us to look at how we evolved through all of that to get to where we are now. And if we could learn from, you know, those lessons and those experiences, I think we'd appreciate one another more. We would appreciate the places that we inhabited together. We would appreciate, for example, these cemeteries that even though they were segregated, the land that was sold to these former slaves was sold by white immigrants. And they were willing to make that sale and allow those people to move into American society out of slavery. So yes, absolutely, there's a lot of discomfort, but I've learned so much from doing this. None of this research that I've uncovered is any of the school books, the history textbooks. It's not in any of the civics lessons. It's just really something we need to learn more about.
Well, especially, you know, when we talk about the heroes and the sacrifices made by the settlers of Texas. Here are settlers with the settlements, these original outposts, and these were people that were heroes. They've gone through so much, and they helped create the Texas that we enjoy today. And the least we can do is recognize them for their achievements and try to remember their names. And I thank you so much for what you're doing in that effort, Everett Fly.
Thanks for having me.
5:30 tomorrow at the Carver Center.
Little Carver, yes.
All right, thanks. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for tuning us in.